Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Travis, and today we're going to talk about 10 different ways to save at least $1,000 in 2024. When I say at least $1,000, some of these ways you could save tens of thousands of dollars, possibly. Just to let you know, we have a much longer list than just this top 10 list, but it's living within our investing course, six-figure debt to six-figure net worth. This week is the only week where you can sign up for this course and get a massive 70% off discount. So I will share more about how to do that at the end of today's episode. The link for that is studentloanplanner.com/invest. But I want to talk about ways you can save money first. The first way to save a bunch of money, and this is helpful to be aware, that the U.S. stock market went up 26% this past 2023 year. That's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, raise your hand if you had it on your bingo card that we were going to get 26% performance with all the anxieties that people have about the economy, right? Probably not. But that's what happened. And so in 2024, given that we had such an amazing year this past year for investment returns, that means it's more likely than not that we might see some, at least a long period of a downward trend in returns at some point in this year. Maybe not, but probably. And if that does happen, you want to be able to take advantage of it from tax loss harvesting. So what tax loss harvesting is, basically, let's just pretend you have the S&P 500 in your portfolio. And let's say that you've got $10,000 in that fund. So it's like a mutual fund, right? You have it in a brokerage account, you put money in it, it's sitting there. That $10,000, let's say the market falls 20%. So it goes from $10,000 to $8,000. So what you do is you got to find an investment that really mimics this investment, but that's not the exact same thing. So if you find an investment that mimics the investment, but it's not the exact same thing, then that qualifies as something that's, quote, similar but not substantially identical. So that's the IRS test as to whether or not something is allowable for a tax loss harvest. What you could do is when you have that 20% loss, you switch the S&P 500 index fund to one that's similar, which is the total stock market index fund. It's almost the same thing. If you put them on a graph, they probably fit their performance maybe about 99% or something crazy high like that. So you invest in this other fund that's very similar, and let's say that fund goes up and down a little bit, but let's say you wait 30 days plus, that's how long you have to wait, and then you buy back the original investment that you had. Let's just say, just to make the math easy, let's say that particular investment just stayed flat for the 30 days, which is unlikely, but let's just pretend that it did, okay, to make the math easy. So that $2,000 loss is something that you can now claim on your taxes. Now you can claim up to a $3,000 loss every year against your active W-2 income. That's wonderful. Most people are in a pretty high income tax bracket, especially if you're, you know, having to pay 10% of your income for your IDR payment. So if you do tax loss harvesting, hopefully, if you are investing a significant amount of money, hopefully at a minimum, you'd be able to get $3,000 of losses that you could apply against your income. And let's just say you're in a 24% federal bracket, which is most middle-class people would be in this bracket, by the way. 24% federal, 6% state, 10% for income-driven repayment. So that's a 40% tax hit. So if you were able to find a $3,000 quote-unquote paper loss this year, that would save you $3,000 times 40%. That's $1,200. By the way, that's approximately what our financial planning service SLP Wealth costs per year. $99 a month, at least as of the moment that I recorded this, for people who sign up at a time when there's a discount for that. I should say all those caveats. Gosh, whenever I say that, I have to say all these caveats. So also, SLP Wealth is a registered investment advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. And all investments come with lots of principal. Anyways, now that that's out of the way, that's the number one way to save at least $1,000. Now, what happens if you get tax loss harvesting that's way more than $3,000? What happens if you have six figures that you're investing, and then you have a $50,000 tax loss harvest that you're able to capture? So what you would do is use that $3,000, and then if you have any gains that year, you could write off the losses against the gains. And then if you still have unused losses, you can do something called a carry forward loss. So that means that you get to use it for the future. Let's say you go sell a dental practice one day, and you've got a bunch of gains from that dental practice. You can use those losses to offset those gains. That's pretty cool. Now, number two, hopefully I didn't lose too many people. I'll try to move through these quickly. Number two is use a car buying service. If you're in the market for a new car, obviously we're in a world where you don't need to pay MSRP anymore. one of the best ways to potentially avoid having to pay MSRP is to use a car buying service, specifically one of the ones from Costco or Sam's Club. Now, if you are a people pleaser, kind of like I am, if you hate negotiating with the smoke and mirrors show of, oh, I got to go talk to my sales manager. Oh, you're really beating me up on this price. Oh, is there anything more we could do, right? It's kind of like a game for car sales, and right, like the salesperson's incentive is to try to get as much of a price above MSRP as possible because it means a bigger commission. And so if you want to just avoid that when you're going to buy your next car, if you happen to be a Sam's Club or a Costco member, they have a car buying service. And what you can do is put in the car that you're looking for, and then it's going to send your information out to a local car dealer that will offer a pre-negotiated rate for that car. Now, if you wanted to be real hardcore, you could take that pre-negotiated rate and find a competitor in town, if there is one, and say, can you do better than the Costco rate? What we found is even during the pandemic supply shortages, this saved us $3,000 off of MSRP, which is pretty nuts. I mean, think about how difficult it was to get a car during the pandemic. The fact that this service got us $3,000 off MSRP, I was pretty impressed by that, because it's something that I would have just probably just ordered it at MSRP, assuming that there's no way I could get better than that, but with all the supply chain shortages that existed. And what probably would be the case now that a lot of those supply chain problems are eased is you probably could get an even better deal. You know, I would say unless you're just somebody that just absolutely loves the game, which I had a coworker who did. He just absolutely loved just beating up car salespeople just to get the best price because he just thought it was fun. If that's not your personality, check out one of those services if you happen to be in the market for a new car. And that's a new car. There's also smart ways to save money on used cars. Best way there is just to, if you can afford to pay cash, find something on Craigslist. You know, everybody knows Carfax, but there's like a cheaper one that you can get for the same, but it does the same thing. You just can Google it. And then you make sure that there's no problems with its record. Maybe try to buy something that's newer, that has warranty. And you'll get a much better deal if you can afford to pay cash. I bought most of my used cars that way. Basically, I meet somebody at a public place, like a bank, where there's a lot of cameras. Obviously, test drive it first. I'd take it to your own mechanic, make sure the car looks good, see how well it looks, if it was that they think it was maintained. Those are some things if you're thinking about cars. Number three, let's say you want to travel in 2024. Woo, that's a big thing a lot of people want to do, right? So how you travel can save you a lot of money. So obviously there are credit card rewards programs that you can get points to put in to save. Usually you can convert like a point that's worth 1 cent into something that's worth like 1.4 cents on average if you book hotels through some of these credit card rewards websites. Now the problem with those is it tricks you into spending more on your credit cards, and if you even forget one payment at all, then you've already cost yourself way more than the rewards of these programs. It's a little bit hazardous there. So if you want to do something that's not credit card rewards, one kind of fun way that I've found to save money is Hotwire for hotels. They'll tell you a particular region that you can book in. And a lot of times you can kind of figure out what hotel it is. So you can kind of look and see what the most recent hotel someone got is. You can figure out like, okay, are there any, especially if you know an area, are there any 4.5-star boutique hotels in this neighborhood besides the one that I want to book at? And I've had a lot of success with that, getting steals of a deal on bookings, especially like during the pandemic, like when we were just exhausted and we felt like, oh man, it'd be great to have a little staycation. We knew that there was only one 4.5-star boutique hotel in our neighborhood, and it was a wonderful hotel, and we could always stay there for 40% off because we knew it was on Hotwire and we could figure it out. Now, there's also ways if you want to stay at a specific hotel. You know, hotels.com's got rewards programs, and you want to think about how these sites work. They get something in the order of 30%, maybe not 30% as commissions, but it might be a little high. But they pay basically the hotels pay a big commission to these booking sites to be listed. So you have to know that there's a huge incentive for these hotels to have you book directly instead of through these booking sites. And sometimes you can truly find a better deal by looking at the hotel itself and trying to book directly. There might not be better prices, but there might be better terms, like better cancellation rates. You might be able to request a better or more specific room. So that's something to think about. If you're planning some big trips for 2024, be aware of some of these hacks to save money on where you book. I'll say one more fun one before we move on there. Also, be careful about you know, companies often know a lot more about you than you think you do, right? So I'll give you an example. We had our second child, and we got this amazing credit card reward offer from Southwest where you could get the companion pass, which if you don't know, is you can basically buy one ticket and fly one free. So it's like a buy one, get one free deal for 2 years. It's amazing. If you time it right, you can get it for 2 years. Like, so you have to kind of, you know, like let's say you got to whatever the threshold is, like 100 some thousand points, and you get that from one or two credit cards that you open with them, and you get the pass for this year if you do it early in the year and all of next year. So it's like almost 2 years worth of buy one, get one free. Sounds amazing, right? Well, except we had a newborn at home last year with special needs, like medical needs, where it was very difficult for him to travel safely with some of his respiratory problems. Even if he hadn't had respiratory problems, with two kids, you don't go very many places, or at least it's a lot harder to, right? And so I think Southwest probably just identified, hey, somehow we know this couple had another child, and so let's go send them an amazing offer for a companion pass when we know they probably won't use it. So, they got us, right? So always be aware of, like, what are the catches, what are the deals, right? Otherwise, you'll be the person someone's making a profit on. Number four way to save at least $1,000 is put off certification of your income for your income-based repayment. A lot of ways that you can take advantage of this, I think. If you simply legally delay filing your tax return, the most recent tax return they'd have available would be the one prior. Now, this only works if your recertification date is somewhere between April and, you could say really like March and October, when putting off a return might make sense. But certainly don't file your return early, like, you know, an eager beaver to try to get your taxes submitted fast and then find out, oops, I'm an attending. Last year I was resident, and then I just cost myself having to pay $2,000 a month because I was too eager and recertified my income early. So this could be easily a way you could cost yourself five figures based off of just the new rules with IRS automatically importing everything in Department of Ed. We think there's going to be some planning opportunities from this. Number five is invest any amount of money at all. Obviously, in a year where the stock market returned 26%, that's just what one fund did, right? Like the VTSEX Total Stock Market Index Fund, that's U.S. stocks. Other types of stocks did not perform as well as that. It's important to have a diversified portfolio, right? If you didn't earn 26%, that's okay. That's actually good. You want to be diversified. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket of U.S. stocks. You know, if you invested any amount of money last year, you came out ahead. Now, investing any amount of money this year is going to help you also come out ahead. Why? Because you're either going to make money or you'll have losses and you'll be able to use tax loss harvesting and save money on taxes. And that loss is going to be a temporary loss because long term, when you put more and more money into investing, there's almost never a 10 to 20 year period where you didn't make money. So if you're going to be investing at least 10 years, then putting money away of any kind into investments in 2024 will be a way you could save at least $1,000. Number six, increase your deductibles. That sounds nuts. One thing about insurance companies, one of the greatest luxuries, I'm convinced, is not having to talk to the insurance company unless you absolutely have to. So one of my famous examples is one time my wife sideswiped her door in her car backing out of the parking garage. And I made the mistake of calling the insurance company and letting them know that that happened in case we wanted to file a claim. And we didn't end up doing it because I think our deductible was like $500 and the claim would have been for $800. And I just didn't want to have our insurance go up. You know, I thought they'd make up more than that $300 difference on us if we claimed it. Well, lo and behold, I didn't know this, but if you tell anything to an insurance company, they put it on a recording and they have it to use against you. So think of an insurance company as you're getting arrested, and anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of the insurance company and the rates they make you pay and the future policies that they'll sell you. What I mean by that is because of that mention, we tried to increase a different policy that we had for increased limits. And they wouldn't increase the limits. And I was like, why? And it's because, you said this thing about this fender bender situation where your wife scraped the car door and you told us about it. And I was like, oh gosh, that's really dumb. I should keep my mouth shut. So here's the thought. You pay money for lower deductibles. Oftentimes insurance companies know that people with lower deductibles, not always, but are often folks that can't afford to have a higher deductible. So they can get away with charging you more for that low deductible. So if you want to save some money, you might see, well, what does it look like if I have a deductible for $2,000 for my car instead of $500? maybe the difference is not that much, but maybe it is. Depends on your insurance company. Look at your homeowner's insurance. What's your deductible? Could you increase your deductible if you can easily afford that higher deductible? If you're not going to make a claim anyway, because nobody wants their insurance rates to go up and to be looked at more carefully in terms of your pricing, then there's no point in having a low deductible anyway. You're paying for something you're not even going to use. While we're on this topic of insurance, my number seven way to save at least $1,000 in 2024 is to shop around on your insurance. Don't assume that whatever you have is the right thing to do. The most shocking example that I think I've had is somebody was putting thousands of dollars a month into some very high fee life insurance investment vehicle. Plus, they bought disability insurance through that same company and they were paying, I think, twice as much as they needed to for the disability insurance. They were paying way more than needed to for a very poor performing insurance investment. And, you know, whenever you hear insurance investment or investing in insurance or something like, you know, invest like the billionaires do, like it's just some salesy thing that you should ignore. But, you know, if you have some sort of insurance policy of any kind, if you shop around at least two places, you'll probably save money. Three is probably as many as I would shop around just because you've got better things to do with your life. But, you know, if you have any kind of insurance, like an example, homeowners insurance, the one that our mortgage company recommended ended up costing twice as much and covering half as much as the one that we found by shopping around. So we got double the coverage for half the money. That's like a 4x return just from shopping around for our homeowners when we were buying a house. For term life, I bought a term life policy through one of these just like ad things online. And it was like $40 a month for a million of coverage. And then I was younger. And then I waited until I was a little older. And then I found a policy that was 3 million of coverage for 80 a month or something, even though I was older. So it was like more coverage for like less money per million. And it was just like, why didn't I do this in the first place? You know, it's because I didn't know. I didn't shop around. So that's a great way to shop around. And, you know, if you have disability insurance needs there, you know, you can get those shopped around for you. SLP insurance can help you with that. If you look at studentloanplanner.com, you'll see the little widget that says disability insurance. And we've got folks that can help out with that. And number eight is be aware of your tax rate. So this is an interesting exercise. You might not know this, maybe you do. Income earned from stock investing typically is taxed at way lower rates than income earned from putting money in a savings account. Here's an example of this. If you put money in a savings account at 5%, you're going to get taxed at what's called ordinary income rates, which is just the top rate. So that top rate right now is 40.8%. So that's 37 is the top federal income rate plus 3.8 for the ACA, for Affordable Care Act. That's the net investment income tax. So 40.8%, that's what you'd have to pay on interest income from a savings account. Now, for dividends or capital gains, it's only 23.8. So that's nearly 20% less. That's a big difference. Now, take into account this. On top of that, as an IDR borrower, if you're doing IDR, you're paying 10% for IDR. And let's say you live in a state like California that charges an income tax. If you're making a lot of money, let's say you're a physician in California, if you took your IDR plus your savings account, top interest of or top tax payment for federal, which is 40.8, plus California, which is like top rates 12.3, that's a total tax rate of IDR plus taxes of 63.1%. Oh my gosh, 63.1%. So if you are investing in a 5% yielding savings account, let's just multiply that to see what that is. So that'd be like earning 1.8%. Think about that. Oh my gosh. So instead of earning 5, you thought you were earning 5, but after taxes, you're only earning 1.8. So let's pretend that you've got $200,000 in a savings account in California because you're trying to buy a house or something, and you're paying that kind of tax rate. Well, did you know there's something called a California Municipal Money Market Fund? Vanguard has one of those. At the time I recorded this, it yielded about 3.4, and it's exempt from federal, state taxes, and it also doesn't show up in your AGI. So you'd avoid the 10% from your student loan IDR payment too. 3.4 after taxes is way better than 1.8. That's a 1.6% difference, I think, there. So if you've got $100,000 sitting in a savings account in California, that's an extra $1,600 in your pocket. If it's $200,000, it's an extra $3,200 in your pocket. So you got to be aware of your tax rate, and you got to be aware of tax strategies with investing. That'll save you a ton of money. Taxes, everybody gets so worked up about what fees people are paying to professionals, right? That does matter. But what matters, frankly, the most of all is taxes. Taxes will hurt you way worse than high active fund expense ratios. It'll hurt you worse than a fee you pay to a financial planner. And unfortunately, oftentimes people use taxes as a pain point to sell junk. You'll see a lot of people, this is, you know, just my opinion, but you'll see a lot of people in the commissioned world, especially in the investing and insurance commissioned world, that will use taxes like an absolute knife and twist it, because they know that folks in medical professions and folks that went to graduate school have solid incomes. They know that you hate taxes, and they know that if they can twist that knife, you might buy some junk product because it's sold as a way to save money on taxes. But it's, you know, you can save money on taxes, but if the yield's terrible, then it's not a good investment. Number nine way to save at least $1,000 is to open a retirement account if you're a self-employed person. And if you're not a self-employed person, open a brokerage account, because you can do that tax loss harvesting stuff we talked about earlier. But if you are self-employed, you can put gobs of money away. I mean, we're talking massive amounts. Typically, you want to have that self-employed investing strategy also be paired with your tax strategy, which is something that we've started doing with SLP Wealth and our tax team. But basically, the idea is, okay, let's say you're making $100,000 a year as a, let's say you're a psychologist with your own practice. Instead of paying 15% on the whole $100,000 for FICA tax, which is $15,000, let's just say you claim a wage of $50,000 and you have $50,000 as a dividend. You set up something called an S corporation. So now you can go set up a solo 401k if you don't have employees, and you can do the max employee contribution, 20-something thousand, I think it's 23,000. And then you can also do up to 25% of your wages. So you could do 25% of 50,000 as well on top of that. So you could put away, you know, more than 30 grand away for retirement. And the max amount you can put away, I think, is like 67,000 or something really high like that. You know, that's crazy. That's really a way you could save just tens of thousands of dollars in taxes. And again, if you're a W-2 employee, you can still save lots of money on taxes. Remember that discussion about looking at your what taxes you're paying on your investments, not ignoring taxes, right? The massive tax you're paying on stuff in your savings account, maybe you're not even aware of it. So a whole lot of people would want to look at tax-free investing compared to taxable investing for their safe money. It's something really to think about. And number 10 way to save at least $1,000 is to do your taxes the right way this year. So we're going up on tax season. We're going to have the NFL playoffs starting soon. You're going to start seeing all of the tax slayer and the TurboTax ads, because, you know, that's when people have the pain, right? Is when you're having to do your taxes. You know, if you've procrastinated a bunch, you could reach out to our help inbox, help@studentloanplanner.com. You could reach out with, if you're like, oh my gosh, I'm panicking, I meant to get help with filing separately, but I'm late. We can help with that. In terms of doing your taxes the smart way, the thing to be aware of is the save plan allows you to file separately now. It didn't used to be the case with the repay plan, right? And pay of an IBR allow you to file separate too. So if you are a married couple, if you're both going for forgiveness, maybe you don't need to file separate. But maybe you live in a community property state and you do need to file separate, even though you both have loans. Maybe one of you has loans, but filing separate would be such a damaging amount in taxes that it doesn't make sense to file separate. You should file joint instead. You know, that's, of course, one of the core things we help people figure out in our student loan consults. But actually doing the taxes and actually looking at all of the credits and deductions and seeing what you lose and don't lose and just double checking that's what you should do, and then actually doing it, you know, those are separate things. But do your taxes the smart way. In addition, remember what I said earlier about putting off that certification of income. A lot of people will want to file separate for 2023 tax year with an amendment filed that puts off that filing requirement from April until October to get a much better deal on your taxes. What we're going through right now with investing, so like those 10 points, how does that relate to investing? Well, it all relates to investing either directly or indirectly, because if you save money, that's more money that you have that's available for other stuff. And if you were going to just use it randomly on something, you could randomly use it on investments and build your future security. For stuff that's directly related to investments, like looking at your self-employed retirement accounts or looking at the marginal tax rate you have and looking at the taxes you're paying on your investing or doing tax loss harvesting, this is stuff that you can learn. It doesn't have to be something that you do on your own either, unless you want to. So I want to talk a little bit about the coming in environment, the market environment for 2024. Think about the last time we had a market that was just ebullient. The dot-com bubble is the most memorable time. And what do we have back then in the 90s? We had the internet. What do we have now? AI. Could we have a repeat of the dot-com bubble? I think we very well could. It's not a guarantee at all, but we could. And what would that look like? Well, in 2000, the market fell 10%, 11%, and then 21%. So you had the dot-com bubble bursting, then you had 9/11. So it was like back-to-back. And that's actually hiding how bad things got because, you know, the market fell a ton and then recovered some within that 2000 year. So it's actually, it's worse than it actually sounds, if that makes sense. Like the 10% loss then in the 2000 wasn't what somebody experienced from point A to point B. It was a big swoop down and then recovery a little bit. What if that happens? So if you put money in 2000 to the US stock market, $1,000 fell to $600-ish. And then if you'd held on though until 2010, right around the middle of the last big crash we had in 2008, then that 1,000 that you started with in 2000 would have been in 2010 about 1,100 or so. But what if you kept investing? What if you'd invested $1,000 for that whole period for 2000 until today? So it's $23,000 of investments. What would you have? You'd have about $98,000. That's a hypothetical illustration. It's not a promise of any kind of performance or anything. But it does show how even if you start at the worst time, in a period where the market crashes like crazy and everybody's blaming themselves, I should have seen this coming, et cetera, but we didn't, and then it happens. You don't have to blame yourself. You can use it as an opportunity. And the reason you can use it as an opportunity in your case is because of your skill level. You have much higher education than most people do. Your level of education gives you a higher skill level that protects you from recessions compared to the average worker. So if you look at the unemployment rate for professionals during recessions, it's like 2 to 7%, and it's usually around 2 or 3% for most cases, and that's in bad recessions. So think about what you do. Think about what the chances that your job could go away, and then think about the chances that you'd be able to get another job. So if you're able to get another job, then you're going to be in a good situation, right? And the reality is almost everybody that gets laid off in your profession probably will get a new job pretty quickly if you want one. And that's really important because of the way the business cycle works. We have crashes, right? If you're a mortgage broker or a stockbroker or a car salesperson, your income is going to be correlated heavily to the economy. So if the economy is doing poorly, your income is going to go down. You will have to reduce your contributions to investments during down years. Contrast that to somebody who's a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer or a physical therapist or a veterinarian or whatever, you know, profession you're in. That is the situation where you'll be able to sustain your investing at a similar level from what you usually do when other people cannot. So that would give you a much lower average cost. This is called harmonic mean, if you want to look it up. That lower average cost gives you much better returns in your money. So you'll make a lot more money because of who you are and because of your skill and your education, which is wonderful. Now, what I see people typically not do is they put off investing or they put off seriously investing or they put off looking at their investments and really kind of trying to proactively manage things because they don't have the time or they don't have the knowledge. So that's why I want to talk about our course, Six-Figure Debt to Six-Figure Net Worth, usually $1,000, 70% off. It's $299 through this week only. You can get that discount by going to studentloanplanner.com/invest. studentloanplanner.com/invest. That is the best deal you're going to find on that course. It's a course we've had for years, and it's consistently updated. So you don't just get the updates now, but you get the lifetime updates, and you keep getting those updates with no additional cost. And if you are anything between a do-it-yourselfer to somebody that wants somebody to manage your own stuff, I would encourage this course for everybody because it's going to help you learn things, at least one thing that you didn't know already. And if it doesn't, then you just send an email to our help inbox and ask for your money back, and it's 100% no questions asked refund. If you ask within a week of buying the course, we give 100% refund there if you don't like it for any reason or no reason at all. The vast majority of people take it and love it, and we get tons of great feedback on it, and a lot of people tell us they've saved six figures because of that course. So that's pretty cool. That's a great return on a couple hundred bucks or a few hundred bucks. Again, studentloanplanner.com/invest. And if you are thinking, you know, hey, I'd rather not invest my own money, then you can reach out to us about SLP Wealth if you'd like. And then we can obviously do it for you if you'd prefer not to learn about it. But I think a great way to do it is learn about it. Even if you're already a client, you might learn about it. And then it'll give you a little bit more knowledge, at least have a baseline level of knowledge about investing for 2024 and beyond. So studentloanplanner.com/invest. That link is going to go away into this week. Hope you join us in that course if you haven't already. Thank you, everyone.